is the Cloud Enough Podcast, your launchpad for Amazon Web Services.
Welcome to the Cloud Enough Podcast. My name is Michael.
And my name is Andreas.
We are brothers and freelancers focusing on Amazon Web Services. We do technical coaching, for example, for teams that start their journey with AWS, and infrastructure bootstrapping, typically based on our infrastructure as code templates for our clients worldwide. Every other week, we discuss a topic related to AWS here in the podcast. One of us prepares the topic, and the topic is not known to the other one. So this week, Andreas has prepared a topic for us, and I have no clue what he's going to talk about. So Andreas, what's the topic today?
Yeah, Michael. So I want to continue our series of reviewing AWS services. So we do that from time to time. Our goal is to look at a kind of a newish AWS service and review the current state of that service. And that's typically one of the most popular posts and podcast episodes that we do. And I'm happy to do another part of that series. And today we do a review of the new HTTP APIs, which is part of the Amazon API Gateway service. So Michael, what do you think about that?
Okay, that sounds interesting. I haven't used them yet. So I was trying to use them very early on, but the CloudFormation deployment was not working at this time. So I haven't tried since then. So that's definitely an interesting topic to me. So yeah, I think we can get started, Andreas.
Yeah, okay, so let's get started. So basically, what is an API gateway? I want to start with that question. So an API gateway basically acts as the front end for your API. So it receives the API requests from your clients, for example, from a web application or what have you. And the API gateway is basically acting as the entry point to your system. And typical features of an API gateway are throttling, billing, authentication, and authorization, maybe request validation, sometimes request and response transformation. So these are typical features. But the main thing is actually it receives the request from the client and then hands it over to a backend system. So it's acting as the front end for your API. And AWS offers different types of API gateways as a managed service. And we want to have a look at one service that AWS announced in December 2019. So this is now half a year ago, which is called API Gateway HTTP APIs. So this is new. It is generally available since March, so only 3 months ago. And what AWS promises is that HTTP APIs are faster and cheaper than the one that we had before, which is called REST API. And this review is, I want to have a look at the technical facts instead of the flowery marketing promises. And so I want to dive a little bit deeper into the HTTP APIs.
Okay, Andreas. So you already mentioned that there are different kinds of managed API gateways. So before we get started, could you maybe provide an overview over the other options besides API gateway HTTP APIs?
Yeah, so that's a very good thing, I think, before we start, because it's really confusing. The naming is very confusing, I think. So it started with the API gateway REST APIs. That is what AWS calls that service nowadays. And this is the full-feature flagship service to build REST APIs. It was announced in 2015, so 5 years ago almost. And this was the time when we started with serverless applications based on Lambda. And the API gateway was the service that basically allowed you to trigger a Lambda function based on an incoming HTTP request. So this is API gateway REST APIs. Then we have what we will talk about today, the API gateway HTTP APIs. And as I told you, this is the new service with the goal that it is cheaper and faster than the previous version. We will have a look into the details later. And then we have API Gateway WebSocket APIs. This was announced in 2018, and it allows you to build a real-time API using WebSockets. So this is no longer REST APIs. It is now based on WebSockets. So it's intended for real-time communication. You can also use it to push messages to a client. So this is another interesting approach. And then we have a service that is called AWS AppSync. With AppSync, you can build APIs based on GraphQL. So this is a way to build APIs that, I think, Michael, is that correct? It comes from Facebook.
Yes, that's correct.
So this is a new way, so another way of building APIs. It's not a REST API. It's another way of defining APIs. And I think it's fair to say that the focus of a GraphQL API is it is basically purposely built for mobile applications. So they care a lot of making as the least possible requests. They also care a lot about only transferring the data that the client really needs. So this is an interesting approach as well, and it gets very popular nowadays as well. And then there is another way to build APIs. I don't think it is really an API gateway, but you can think of it a little bit as an API gateway. This is the Application Load Balancer, the ALB, which is a layer 7 load balancer. And it also supports, for example, Lambda functions, EC2 instances, container as backends. So it has some similarities with an API gateway, I would say.
Okay, Andreas. So I agree that the names are a little bit confusing. So API gateway is now offering two different kinds of API gateways. So the REST API style, which is the old one, and the HTTP APIs, which is the newer one, which we will discuss here.
Yeah, and maybe create even more confusion. So you also build REST APIs with the HTTP API, right? So the thing you do is the same. But yeah, that's the naming. So API Gateway REST APIs is the old one. HTTP APIs is the new one. And then we have WebSockets as a totally different thing, which is also under the same umbrella API Gateway service. Okay, yeah. So I hope this was...
The benefit is with the name, you know what it's about. But the disadvantage is that it's like calling a service text editor. So it's...
so it's also really hard to Google it.
Yeah.
So search for HTTP, you will maybe not find something related to AWS. Yeah, but okay. Let me then continue with how does HTTP APIs work. So first of all, with HTTP APIs, you specify a REST API. So you can do that, for example, by using the OpenAPI 3 specification. So basically, you define in REST terms, you define your resources, you define the method, and basically build your REST API out of that. So for example, you define, I have a GET method, which is /account to retrieve the information about an account or something like that. This is what you can do. With that API specification, you can do it with OpenAPI 3, but it's not required. You can also just do it by calling the AWS APIs as well. You define your REST API, and then you can publish your REST API. And this basically results in a publicly available HTTPS endpoint. So this is what API Gateway HTTP APIs create and provide for you. This is this public endpoint. And then the HTTP API forwards the incoming request to one of the following backend endpoints. So we have support for Lambda functions. So this is basically important to build serverless applications. You can forward the incoming request to any publicly available HTTP endpoint. So this could be your infrastructure running on AWS, for example, an application load balancer or something. It could also be something running somewhere else, and you just use the API gateway as a front end for that. And the third option is you can even link it with internal services. So it supports internal application load balancers that only have private IP addresses inside a VPC on AWS. Or it supports ECS with CloudMap. So this is basically the service discovery mechanism of ECS. So those are the supported endpoints. And on top of that, the HTTP API offers some other features, which is we have authentication based on JWT tokens. So this is for OpenID Connect or OAuth 2. It supports cross-origin resource sharing out of the box, which is important if you build web applications that talk to an API to fetch data and stuff. And you have that is similar to the REST API. You can deploy stages to have different versions of your REST API running in parallel or having different environments, for example, a test environment, production environment, and so on. And it supports custom domain names. So you can bring your own domain name, create a certificate for that, and then you can talk to that API with that domain name.
Well, I have one question regarding the integration of the internal load balancer. So do you know how it works? So is it also like the API gateway, the REST API style, works by creating a private link? So your load balancer, I'm not sure if it also works with application load balancer these days, but if it's a network load balancer, then you have to create a private link, and then you can connect it. Do you know how it works with the HTTP APIs? Is it also like a big problem, or is it easy to configure?
I'm not 100% sure. I haven't tried it, but as far as I remember from the documentation, it is working in the same way. Yeah, it also uses the VPC link. Okay. Yeah, I think it's working similar. So what is not possible, you cannot build a private API with the HTTP APIs. So that is a feature that is not available with the new service. And that is maybe something that I have to say at the beginning now. The HTTP API does not come with all the features that the REST API comes with. So there are a lot of features that are missing. When you watch the talks from reInvent or listen to people talking from AWS talking about HTTP APIs, they promise that they will catch up with all the features in the future. But nowadays, the feature set is limited, very limited, compared to the REST API implementation on AWS.
Okay, I see.
Okay, so I want to continue with having a look at the two main promises of HTTP APIs. What are the promises? Do you remember them, Michael?
I think it's cheaper and it's faster. So yeah
that's exactly. So that's basically the two promises. And that is, that's a good thing to do, right? Provide a cheaper service that is even faster. Okay, so I had a deeper look into that. So in general, it is correct that HTTP APIs are cheaper than REST APIs. So API gateway, in those two different flavors, HTTP APIs are cheaper. And you can say that you can have a cost reduction by 70% basically on HTTP API costs compared to a REST API, which is quite a lot actually. So you have to know that you pay per request. So 1 million requests cost you $1 with the HTTP API and costs you $3.50 with the REST API. So that is definitely important, especially if you have an application with a lot of requests, basically. For both, you pay for the outgoing data transfer and you pay 9 cents per gigabyte. This is the same for both API options. So what you basically, where the cost reduction comes from is the per request price of your API. But there is a catch to it. So you have to know that HTTP APIs meters a request in 512 kilobyte increments. That means if you send a request with 513 kilobytes, you will pay for two requests, actually. So also important to know here is this is calculated based on the request and also the response. So the data that you transfer for both. And what that results in is if you have many requests that transfer more than 1,536 kilobytes per request and response, HTTP API will even be more expensive than a REST API. So that is something you have to consider. So probably most scenarios have API requests and responses which fit into the 512 kilobyte. But if you, build an API, for example, to transfer analytics data or stuff like that, you might run into the problem that you then even pay more than you had with the REST API. Okay, so in summary, pricing, it is cheaper than the REST API. All you have to take into consideration is if you build an API where you have to transfer a lot of data, then this becomes important. Then I had a look into the promise of, is the new API, the HTTP API, is it really faster? Does it reduce the latency compared to a REST API? And to do so, I did a simple test setup. So I created an HTTP API with a Lambda function integration and a REST API with a Lambda function integration. The Lambda function was just returning a static response. And I also created an EC2 instance, an M5 large instance that was running K6, which is a load testing tool, to run a simple load test on both API options, so HTTP and REST APIs. And what you can say is roundabout HTTP APIs reduce latency by something like 16%. On average. So I also have some numbers for the 90th percentile and the 95th percentile, if you're interested. There will be a link to the blog post that covers the same topic in the show notes of this podcast episode. So if you're interested into more details and more numbers, you can check that out. So what is important for our podcast now is, we reduced the latency by something about 16%. Which is actually something, it is something like 2 milliseconds, which is, I think, excellent.
Okay, so I think we can say that if you switch to the HTTP API, you save around about 2 milliseconds, and depending on how long the relative savings rate depends heavily on how long the request needs for processing. But yes. So the hard fact is that it's 2 milliseconds faster compared to the REST API.
Yeah, I think that is absolutely true. So that is the important fact, because you probably need to fetch data from DynamoDB or what have you, and this is probably taking much longer than the processing on the HTTP API. But it's about 2 milliseconds faster. The question is, of course, so that is something I thought about is, okay, so HTTPI is not feature complete yet. There is a lot to cover. And what happens when AWS implements all those features? Because I think most of that features will add some latency to the processing. So let's see if that really continues to be the case in the future.
Okay.
So that is maybe interesting to watch with every new feature release they do. Do they still keep up with that latency improvement?
Yeah, I see. Yeah.
Okay, so what we can say is with latency, AWS fully delivers on their promise to build faster or an API with less latency than we had before. So REST APIs come with a built-in cache. And what is important to know here is that caching for REST APIs, so the old API style, is charged by provisioned memory size an hour. So it starts with $15 for 512 megabyte, and it's up to 2,700 dollars for 237 gigabyte per month. So this is a way that you can cache requests on the API gateway. HTTP APIs do not provide a built-in caching layer. So I don't think that is really that's not really that big of a problem, because you can use, for example, CloudFront in front of your HTTP API to cache requests as well. And CloudFront does not come with a monthly base fee. Instead, there you pay per request and for the data transfer. So that is maybe an option that you can use CloudFront to cache requests there.
Okay, and I mean, if you really want to have more control, you could still, like in your Lambda function, like in your application, you could still integrate with Redis or Memcache and do your own caching.
That's another option, of course. Yeah, and there's also maybe something that is really technical details now, but the REST APIs come in two different options. You can have them regional and what AWS calls edge. When you deploy it with the edge option, the REST API, AWS uses the edge locations that also are used for CloudFront, the content delivery network, basically to make sure that incoming traffic enters the network controlled by AWS faster, so that you can reduce your latencies. So this might be this is a feature that also is only available for REST APIs. When you want to build something similar with HTTP APIs, you could use CloudFront here as well, which basically is a very similar thing with the difference that CloudFront caches at the edge, and the REST API by default does not cache at the edge. It caches on the region level. So that is maybe the differences. But of course, you can mix all those together, so you can actually get every combination for HTTP APIs and REST APIs as well. But yeah, it's just important to know that the built-in caching is missing for HTTP APIs here. Okay, I want to continue with the developer experience. So when introducing the HTTP APIs, AWS also said we focused on simplifying the process for developers to build their APIs. And one thing they did is a feature that is called Quick Create. Quick Create allows you to really simply create an HTTP API that forwards all requests to a single endpoint. So for example, a single Lambda function, which is probably the most important use case for HTTP APIs as serverless applications. So with just a few lines of CloudFormation or Terraform code, you can set up an API gateway and define the target, which can be a Lambda function. So then what AWS is doing is they provision you an HTTP API, they do a default stage, they do a default deployment, and they just send all requests to that Lambda function. So this is basically, you have that Lambda proxy functionality, you get just the request, just all the data from the request just comes in at the Lambda function as an event, and you can process it there and return the response to the API gateway. So this is really simple. You just need four lines of code to create your API gateway, and it forwards the request to your Lambda function. So I think this is a very good thing for very simple serverless applications where you just have a few resources and methods and you want to get that running quickly and without configuring an API gateway and understand all the things that you need to understand to configure a REST API, for example. So I really like that. I think it is useful in many scenarios where you just need a very simple API endpoint. Besides that, the HTTP APIs allow you to import and export your API in the OpenAPI 3 specification. And when you did the same with REST APIs, you already know the so-called AWS extensions for OpenAPI. this is some extensions that AWS provides that you can use to define request response validation in Amazon style, to build integrations with Lambda functions and stuff. So this is basically the specific feature set for AWS, and the HTTP API supports parts of that specification as well. So if you are familiar with that from the REST API, you can use the same for the HTTP API. We have a source code example in the blog post, so just click a link in the show notes and have a look into an OpenAPI specification example and also a CloudFormation snippet. So personally, I'm not a really big fan of mixing infrastructure as code with the API specification. So I think when you mix the API, the plain API specification that you also maybe want to share with developers, or you want to publish that even to the internet to allow third parties to integrate with your service, I'm not a too big fan of mixing parts of your infrastructure configuration into that API specification as well. And it has been creating me a lot of headaches when using REST APIs with OpenAPI specification. I'm maybe not too big of a fan of that mechanism here with the HTTP APIs. What is interesting, I think, is the approach that AWS AppSync is using here. So the GraphQL API gateway service, and maybe Michael, so because you have used that service a lot, maybe you can explain a little bit how AppSync does the API specification and configuration thing.
Yes, so I think the main difference is that with AppSync, you have your GraphQL schema where you define your mutations and queries. So queries is kind of the GET request of the REST API, and mutation is like everything that like put, post, delete. So everything that changes data is a mutation. And your schema only contains the possible mutations and queries. But there's no connection to the Lambda function, for example, that provides the functionality. So the functionality is mapped to the schema outside of the schema by addressing the names in the schema. So if you look at the schema, you will not recognize that it is somehow connected to AppSync. The only exception is, and they introduced annotations. Everything that starts with @AWS is an annotation for AppSync. So they kind of mix that, and now you can also do some configuration inside the schema that affects AppSync. So, yeah, but the pure way that you configure it is that you have a separate configuration where you kind of link into the GraphQL schema by using names. So you have somehow to make sure that the names really exist, and that's validated by the AppSync service. So, yeah, it's not that intermixed than what you see with the specification, like the API, open API spec that is used for HTTP APIs. Yeah, but it still with the annotations, they kind of mix things also in the AppSync world. So yeah, let's see how that develops.
Okay, so when I understand it correctly, so they started with, you had really plain GraphQL syntax to define your API. And you did the integration with Lambda, for example, by then, in a second step, configuring AppSync, your AppSync gateway. So you already had that separated. That is what I would really prefer here. But yeah, that's how it is. So maybe that's a personal opinion, but yeah. Okay. So any questions, Michael, or can I proceed with the missing features of the HTTP APIs?
So I think you can proceed. So maybe, I'm not sure if you can answer these questions, but how hard is it to, like if I have an existing REST API, so how hard is it to convert into an HTTP API? So is the API spec, like is the extensions that AWS has, is this different or is the extensions the same? So do I need to change anything in the Amazon properties, or how compatible is it?
Yeah, so the Amazon extensions for OpenAPI are the same, But the problem here is that HTTP API do not support most of them yet, because there are all missing features. So what you can is you can export your existing REST API, the Open API specification, download that, and then import that when creating an HTTP API. And what they have in place is they have a validation, and they basically tell you we cannot import this list of extensions. For example, there is no request and response validation or no transformation and stuff like that. So I think that it really depends on your API gateway and how heavily you have used those features of the REST API. In theory, you can migrate by exporting and importing, but I think in practice you will have some troubles with features that are not supported with the HTTP API gateway, at least yet.
Okay, I see. So I think to understand how easy it is to migrate, we have to continue with the next topic, which you already mentioned, the missing features.
The missing features. Yeah, I think that is important. So I had a look at the missing features. And of course, AWS announced that as a service only 6 months ago. And they promised to deliver the missing features compared to the REST API. But I still think it is important to have an overview of what is missing. And I think there are also some very important things that are missing. And I want to start with them. So I want to start with the missing features, I think, are the most important. So when you use an AWS API, so for example, the EC2 API or something like that, there is always rate limiting in place. So with your AWS account, you can only send, I don't know, 1,000 requests per second or something like that. Sometimes it is even less than that. And this is something that is really very important when building an API. You have to rate limit the request to your system. And if possible, you do that by account, tenant, user, whatever you have in your system, to make sure that a single customer basically does not send you too many requests that will bring down your whole system. So I can tell an example, Michael, or maybe you remember it as well. So we had that problem with Marbot. Do you remember that?
Yeah, so maybe some background information. So Marbot is our Slack bot, or a chatbot that you can send AWS alerts to it, like CloudWatch events or CloudWatch alarms, and it then does some parsing and some transformation and sends it to Slack or even Microsoft Teams. And the problem was that we had customers that, for example, connected it to an S3 bucket. So they sent, so every time an object was uploaded, they basically sent us an HTTP request, and then we try to forward this into Slack. And this is not going to work if people upload like lots of files per minute. So what we needed is a way to limit the number of alerts someone can send to Marbot per time window. And with the REST API flavor of API gateway, this is possible. I don't say that it's easy to configure or easy to use, but it is possible. It turns out that it's not that great because there's a limit, so it only works for up to 10,000 accounts or users, and then it starts to not work anymore because they don't support more than that amount of API keys. But still, it's possible for a low number of users, and low is 10,000 around. They don't really communicate that number, but it turns out people have been able to make the API gateway to increase that up to 10,000, that limit. And you really have to provide all kinds of information if you even go from 500 to 1,000 and in the limit increase. So it's really a complicated process that takes a lot of time. So that's possible with the API gateway. So basically, you want to make sure that a customer can only send a certain amount of requests per, usually it's per second or per minute, because otherwise the whole infrastructure behind that will run into issues. So.
Yeah, I remember that we had that issue in our backlog for Marbot for a month. So I always said, Michael, we postpone implementing the API throttling because it's not really the most important thing to do. And then I remember we had an outage really because, as you told, one customer was sending us an extreme amount of requests that basically brought the whole thing down. So I think this is probably true for every API that that you build. When you do not build in proper throttling, you will end up with a problem somewhere in the future, because sooner or later someone will send accidentally or even by purpose a very high number of requests to your API, and this will then cause a lot of problems. So that is why I think it is really important to have that rate limiting in place. And by the way, it's not only from a technical and scaling point of view, it's also from a cost perspective. Because when you build a serverless application and you pay for everything by per request, then this is also a way someone else can create a lot of AWS costs in your account by just sending you a lot of requests. So it's really important to have that. And now I'm coming to the problem here. So the HTTP APIs do not provide user or account-based throttling. So there's a throttling on the AWS account level, on the overall thing, but that is not really helpful, because you cannot turn down the whole thing just because one customer sends you too many requests. So I think this is a really big thing, and it's really a missing feature. And I would even say it is not production ready. So you cannot really use an API in production that does not support user and account-based throttling, because you will most likely end up in a problem.
Yeah, so I agree. And I can also add that the AppSync also does not support throttling on a user or account level. They also have the global limit, but not a more specific one. So that's really, I don't understand, because every time in all of their like white papers, they tell how important it is to throttle requests, and then and their new products don't support it.
Yeah, and I also think there is probably, you will probably not find a single AWS API that does not have rate limiting, except the ones that you pay per request. So, okay.
But I mean, it's, we know why, because they don't want to risk that someone takes down everything by sending lots of requests. So that's why they protect from it. So,
So we should be able to do the same. The problem is it's really hard or almost impossible to build that yourself behind the API gateway. I would say it's really complicated to build something like that with a Lambda function or so. So not very efficient, at least. And to continue a little bit with that, so you could say, okay, that's a missing feature. But there is even another thing that is missing. So you could say, okay, I don't have user and account-based throttling, so let me use a web application firewall to at least be able to block certain clients, to throttle certain clients. And the AWS WAF, the web application firewall that AWS provides, it supports the REST API, but it does not support, surprise, surprise, the HTTP APIs. So you don't have the option to, I don't know, block certain clients, block certain IP address ranges, or certain request types, what have you. You just have a public endpoint, and anyone in the internet is able to send you requests. So that's basically what it is. So let's continue with some other missing features. Something else that is missing, and this is something that we use for our serverless application, the most important one that we have, which is Marbot. The HTTP API does not support X-Ray yet. And I think that is really something helpful, because X-Ray is, I would call it application monitoring or distributed application monitoring provided by AWS. And the REST API integrates very nicely with X-Ray, but HTTP APIs does not. So with REST APIs, you can visualize very easily what requests are coming in on the API gateway, and what's the latency, the error rate, and stuff from the API gateway to certain Lambda functions, for example. So that is, from my perspective, really helpful, and I've used it a lot to debug problems, but it's not supported by the HTTP API. Okay, so I want to continue with a list of features that the HTTP API comes with, and I want to compare the feature set with the REST API, API gateway, and also with the application load balancer a little bit. And again, this is maybe something that is interesting to have a look in the written version, so in the blog post that comes with this podcast episode as well. This is a table of all the features and integrations, and now I want to just highlight a few of them, so that that I don't get into too many details now on the podcast. So I think something that is interesting is that the HTTP API comes with public endpoints. So you can create a public REST API with HTTP APIs, and you can do the same with REST APIs and the application load balancer. What is not yet possible with the HTTP APIs is you cannot do a private endpoint, so an endpoint that is only accessible from your VPC. That is possible with REST APIs and the application load balancer, but not yet with the HTTP API. So that might be something interesting. Another thing, this is a feature that is special to REST APIs. REST APIs offers so-called AWS service integrations. So because the REST API allows you to transform an incoming request, you can transform an incoming request with the API gateway and send it directly to another AWS service without calling any Lambda functions or running any code on your EC2 instances or containers. So people have built crazy things with that. So you can, for example, directly from the API gateway insert data into DynamoDB or to Kinesis or stuff like that. This is a very interesting thing. Because you just don't have to have any Lambda functions in place that you have to pay for, and that causes latency, of course, as well. So that is something interesting, but it's only available with REST APIs. Neither the HTTP API nor the application load balancer support that. What's also maybe interesting is the way the APIs gateway do offer authentication. So HTTP APIs, REST APIs, and the application load balancer, all of them support OpenAPI Connect. This is an easy way to build authentication for your applications. Many companies and enterprise customers using that nowadays. It's supported by all of those types of API gateways. The REST API and the load balancer also support an integration with an AWS service that is called Cognito. And with Cognito, you can do all kinds of other authentications and do, for example, SAML or use social authentications like Google, Facebook, and so on. So that is something that is missing with the HTTP APIs, for example. What's also maybe interesting is REST APIs come with the possibility to build a so-called custom authorizer. So you can implement a Lambda function that basically contains the authentication logic for your system. And that is, you can basically integrate the authentication of the REST API into anything. And this is only available for REST APIs. It's not available for HTTP APIs yet, and also not for the application load balancer. So that is interesting. So I think in summary, it is fair to say that the REST APIs offer the broadest set of features and integrations, and the HTTP APIs are missing a lot of those features at the moment. So that is the thing here. Any questions on that, Michael?
No, I don't think so. But it's interesting to see that, I mean, it was kind of expected that there are many features that are not yet supported. But if you plan to create a new application based on an API gateway, you definitely should check out the missing features before you start, because otherwise you will run into lots of issues. Yeah.
Yeah, so this is also from what I can tell from my experience. So within the last month, every time I wanted to use the HTTP APIs, there was one feature missing that I really wanted to use that then made me use the old-ish REST API instead of the HTTP API. So I think as long as the REST API is available, it's maybe really hard for the HTTP API to gain traction on AWS, because you will always find that one missing feature that you really want to have that is already available but not in the new product. So
yeah,
that's probably also why they have the goal to implement all those missing features, of course.
Yeah, I think I definitely wait for the throttling feature, because otherwise I'm not going to switch out.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So I think one more thing that I always have a look at when doing reviews is I always have a look at the AWS documentation and the part of it which is the quotas. So this is basically the soft limits and sometimes even hard limits for an AWS service. And this is, I think, one of the most important parts of the AWS documentation, because when you decide or when you think of using a service, you really have to know about the limits. And the soft limits are the ones that you might be able to increase by opening an AWS support ticket. The hard limits are the limits that you typically cannot increase. So that's always important to have a look at them. And I had a look at the hard limits of the HTTP APIs. I think the most important ones are the integration timeout. So the time the API gateway waits for the backend, Lambda functions, what have you, to respond is 30 seconds. The maximum payload size is 10 megabytes. Remember the costs. So when you really say send payloads with 10 megabytes over HTTP request, it is getting really, really expensive compared to REST API, just to know, to remember that. And the request line and header values cannot be more than 10,040 bytes. So that is maybe also important. I think the payload size and integration time is definitely the most important here. And by the way, it's the same limitations that apply to REST APIs as well.
Yeah, I think that limit is definitely interesting for people using JWT tokens. Because if you really put lots of, it's not a good practice to put lots of data into your JWT token, but it's possible. And if the token gets too big, then, it's sent as a header, as the authorization header, so you can hit that limit. It really has to be a big token, but I saw projects where there was lots of information in the token and they could run into issues with those limits. Yeah, but if you use it like with care, then you should be fine. Yeah,
I think if you build a modern serverless application, most of those limits should not really affect you too much. And yeah, they are the same as we have with the REST APIs, so you had to work around those limits before as well. Okay, so that is that. And then I want to end the review with something we do for all of our reviews, and this is the service maturity table. So this is a way we try to evaluate the service maturity of a service, and I want to go through that as well. So we have 10 different criterias for that. I start with the ones that the HTTP API fully supports or gets the maximum score of a 10. So the score is from 0, which is the lowest value, to 10, which is the highest maturity. And I will start with the criteria that we have a green checkmark on, which with the highest score. So HTTP API support tags. It support CloudFormation and Terraform support is available. You can use the identity and access management policies to control access to your API gateway. It's integrated with AWS Config. It's integrated with AWS CloudTrail for auditing. It's available in all commercial regions, and you have an SLA for the service. So that is all the score of 10. I think this comes from because it builds upon an already existing service. So I think that is, or I don't know, but that's probably why they checked all those things, because it uses a similar API than other APIs, gateways already. And the documentation detailedness, so there's almost no documentation available for the HTTP APIs. So the developer guide is, it's really the bare minimum that you have to provide for a service. And the API documentation is also, that's the documentation that you generate out of your Java classes, basically. That's what you get. Feature completeness, we discussed that a lot. This is also, I gave that a 2 as well, the same with the documentation detailedness. I think that is really just at the beginning. It's not really mature here. So that is why I end up with a service maturity score of 7, which is quite decent, which comes from, because all these other criteria are implemented and delivered already, which is great on the other side.
Yeah, I think that's the first service review where the feature completeness is so low and still the score is so high. And
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so maybe we have to...
Yeah, I think that is also coming from our how the way we calculate the maturity score as well. Of course, it is... Yeah, it's just... we try to evaluate the maturity score. Of course, it's not... it's just to give you an idea,
Okay, Andreas. So thanks for all your investigation here and comparing the two, basically the two API gateways that are available. So what I can, maybe I can try to summarize how your review, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems to that HTTP APIs might become the new standard for API gateways. So because they are cheaper, usually, like in most cases, they are cheaper. They are a little bit faster. So that's a good argument to use them. But at the moment, you should definitely watch out for all the missing features. You cannot expect the same features to be available than for the REST APIs. And yeah, the biggest problem in my eyes is the throttling, and I guess there are many other users who might be more concerned about missing authentication and authorization features and things like this. But yeah, for a production ready application, it's definitely a problem if you cannot throttle the requests on a user level. So yeah, that would be my summary.
Yeah, perfectly. That's the summary I would give as well. So. Thanks a lot for listening to following that review. So by the way, we have reviews of other services as well. So we have RDS Aurora Serverless, we have Global Accelerator. So you will find links to those blog posts and sometimes even podcast episodes in the show notes as well, if you like that style of reviewing new AWS services.
Yeah, so and Andreas, let me maybe mention one thing, because we talked a little bit about Marbot here in the episode, because it's a like serverless application that's using the REST API flavor of API gateway. But if one of our listeners is interested, so what is Marbot? It's basically a way to monitor your AWS account from Slack and Microsoft Teams. And Microsoft Teams is new, so we recently added that integration. So Marbot helps you to configure the monitoring. So we set up all the rules for you. We set up CloudWatch alarms, event bridge rules. We set up RDS notifications. And like it's more than 50 sources that we connect to. And then if things go wrong, you receive an alert in your chat window, for example, in Slack or in Microsoft Teams. And there you can work with your team to solve the issue and make sure that your systems are and stay up and running all the time. So it's a nice way to monitor and also solve issues that arise inside your AWS account. So if you're interested in things like this and want to improve your uptime, then definitely check out Marbot. And you can start with a free trial, so for 2 weeks, so you can check out all the features and see how it works in your team. Okay, Andreas.
Yeah, so the important announcement, Michael, here, maybe to highlight that one more time. So Marbot was available for Slack for many years now, but what we now announce is it is available for Microsoft Teams. So all of you that could not be using Marbot in the past, you are now able to do so with Microsoft Teams as well. So this is the big news here. And you will also find a link to that announcement in the show notes.
Okay, Andreas. So I think we are done. And thank you very much for preparing the topic. And if one of our, a few other announcements for our listeners. So feel free to share the episode with a friend or a colleague. And that always helps us to increase the number of listeners to this podcast. And if you are a fan of our podcast, then we would really be happy if you would leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you like to listen to podcasts. And last but not least, if you are new to podcasts, so it's the best way to get informed if a new episode is available is to subscribe to the podcast. And you can do this in your podcast listener. And a few examples are there's Apple Podcasts, but there are many other ways to listen to podcasts. You can listen on Spotify, and there are other apps available. But if you subscribe to the podcast, then you get notified if a new episode becomes available, which is every other week in our case. Okay, Andreas, so I think that's it. Thank you very much, and talk to you next time.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Bye.